Okay. I'm Shannon, and I'm an alcoholic. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday Night Speakers Meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety and attending a group conscience meeting. I have done both of those. I am a blackout drunk. I never wanted to do anything without alcohol because it couldn't be fun. The things that I did when I was drinking left me with guilt, shame, and terrible feelings on the inside. And towards the end, no matter how much alcohol I put in my body, those feelings wouldn't go away, and I just kept creating more bad things that I did. I drank for 19 years. I wasn't an everyday drinker, but just because you don't drink every day doesn't mean you're not an alcoholic. So I always told myself, I'm not an alcoholic as long as I don't drink in the morning. But doesn't matter all the other stuff. But I always knew when my next drink was going to be. And that's what kept me going. So at the end of my drinking career, it was suggested I take that lovely test, and I failed it miserably. And I couldn't look myself in the eye anymore. And I came in here just because I wanted to stop drinking. And what I found was by getting a sponsor, working the steps, I found a higher power. And my life has changed tremendously. I have met wonderful people in here who gave me so much. And I know that no matter what happens now, I don't have to pick up a drink to get through it, because a drink's not going to help me solve anything. It's just going to give me more stuff, and it'll all be there when I wake up in the morning. So I'm truly grateful to be here, and if you're new coming back, I suggest you get a sponsor and work the steps, because your life will change just like mine did, in spite of yourself. So with that, the group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And that brings me to our speaker. I met this woman when I first came into the program. I had another sponsor at the time, and I was stuck on my fourth step, imagine. And I ended up asking her to be my sponsor because we'd had several conversations in the parking lot, and I truly admired her. You could tell she had God with her, her higher power, and she was really doing the deal. I love her so much because she's done so much for me. And she doesn't take my bull stuff. She calls me out on it, and she's truly helped me grow. And even today I watch what she goes through, and it's truly amazing because she stays sober. So with that, here's Jacqueline.
I'm Jacqueline. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm terrified. my sobriety date is April 5th, 2003, and that is by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, not because of me. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I was sitting here reading this test, and I've never read this before. And amazingly, the only thing that on here that didn't apply to me was, did you have difficulty sleeping if you were drinking? And I never had that problem because I was blacked out. So I passed with flying colors, so I'm definitely qualified to be here. I guess, you know, I come from an average middle-class family, nothing spectacular except that it was highly dysfunctional. I'm sure many of us have that in common. I didn't really know how dysfunctional it was because that was my normal, you know. My parents were divorced at a young age. I lived with my grandparents, and they were my role models, and they did not drink. But my mother did, and my uncle, and they were, you know, two huge forces in my life. So, you know, I was shy as a child, and, you know, not withdrawn because I always wanted to be popular, but I never was, and I just never felt like I fit in. We moved around a lot because my mother was unstable, so I never got to make friends and keep friends for very long. So, you know, as a result of that, you know, again, I always felt inadequate. I didn't feel like I fit in, and I was always, you know, kind of the new kid. And like I said, we were middle class, you know, so we weren't, you know, weren't wealthy. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have the designer jeans and all the stuff that everybody else, you know, had. So, again, you know, I felt less than, I guess, is probably the way that is to describe. So from very early on, you know, I always felt less than and less than. So I did not start drinking at an early age. I never really liked the taste of alcohol. I had to learn to drink because everyone around me drank, and I was certain that I saw everybody having a great time, and I thought, you know, this would help me fit in. So, you know, when I was in my 17, 18, you know, I really started trying to learn how to drink. And I got off to a rip-roaring start. It did not take me long to get the hang of it. I'm a vodka drinker, and I like it straight, on the rocks, nothing in my vodka, do not mess with it. And I like to drink a lot of it. You know, the normal for me when I was growing up watching my mother drink was, you know, you drank every day, you drank hard, chaos was normal, fighting was normal, being passed out and remember seeing her being remorseful about the fighting and things that would, you know, go on the night before. And I recognize that now, obviously, but, you know, not then. So that, you know, chaos was always normal to me. So as I got older and, you know, left to live on my own, by that time, you know, I was learning how to drink pretty good, but I was also really into other things that aren't alcohol, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'll respect that. But, you know, I loved other things as well. And I don't know that those other things led me to alcohol, but those other things allowed me to drink a lot of alcohol. So I, from very early on when I drank, you know, almost immediately, I always had terrible consequences. I was always behaving badly, driving while I was drinking, and it's just by the grace of God that I did not have, you know, an accident, kill myself or somebody else. I did not care about the consequences. Again, you know, I saw other people doing this. I saw people in my family doing this. You know, this was just normal for me. I did several geographic changes as I, you know, got into, I guess, young adulthood, and my drinking, I was a daily drinker. As soon as I got home off of work, I was drinking, and I drank every night until I went to sleep. And and I loved to go out, and I loved to party because I just always wanted to be where the fun was. So that was normal for me, and I was having a great time, even though when I was drinking, I had vague memories of doing tragic things that I knew I was mortified of, and I was glad that I couldn't remember, and every now and then I would get like that, oh, I think I remember doing that. No, no, no. And, you know, I would just, you know, keep going. I lost most of my family members during the course of my heavy drinking, and I don't know if that got me through that or not. My grandparents and my uncle all died in about a 3-year period of each other, about 20 years ago. And it's to look back at that and realize that I couldn't, you know, be there for my family is, you know, it is devastating. But that is what I did, and I'm very regretful of that. Those are things that I can't, you know, change now. But I drank heavily through it, and I was at the hospital drinking, I was at the funeral drinking, I was, you know, everything was drinking. Everything I did, I had a drink. That was normal for me. So I continued to drink heavily and have consequences. I was married in 1994, and my husband loved to drink and loved to party, and we had a great time. And I could always outdrink him, and he was always passed out, and I just kept thinking, he is no fun, he is a lightweight, what is going on? But we would always fight, you know, and there was always fighting because, you know, I was, you know, I'm not proud to say, but, you know, it is part of my story. You know, I was always the girl that, you know, I wanted everybody but my husband, you know, and so I was always after your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever. And it didn't matter, you know, because when I got drunk, that's what happened to me. I just turned into whatever. And, you know, and I didn't think my husband knew. I was so discreet. Just like he didn't know about my drinking problem. So, you know, and I kind of like Shannon, you know, I mean, I didn't really think, I mean, I knew I had a drinking problem. I knew I drank to excess, but, you know, I hadn't gotten to the point where I was drinking in the morning. Probably about, maybe a year before I got sober, my husband and I had taken a trip, and we had to leave very early for the airport. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was already drinking vodka. And I was very intoxicated at the airport, and I didn't care. You know, I had brought vodka with me because I knew the bar would not be open at, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning. And we got to our layover, which was Houston, and you know, our flight was going to be delayed, and I was not happy about that, and I was letting them know that, you know, very aggressively, and they were asking me to please calm down and have a seat, and I would sit down for 2 seconds, and I would stand back up, and I was right back there, and they told me if I did not sit down that they were going to take me, you know, they were going to have me arrested. I didn't care, I guess, and so I went to sit back down again, and with that I got up and came back, and with that, the police officers came and arrested me, and this is my first, you know, probably major consequence from drinking, you know, click, click, and I was off to the jail. And in Houston, they don't take you to, like, the county jail. They take you, like, an hour away to the women's prison. And that was very scary for me. You know, I was crying. I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, I'm so scared of flying. I'm just trying to make all these, you know, excuses. You know, don't you understand? You know, I've taken some pills. I'm out of it. You know, la la. They didn't care. And, you know, and the thing was that I had believed my own story. You know, they had told me this is what's going to happen if you continue this. And I was like, okay. And so, you know, I was upset about being a couple of hours late to Mexico, and as a result of my stunt, you know, we were a day late to Mexico because it took, you know, I had to be bailed out of jail and all that, and it was very scary to be in prison, and it was very humiliating to be in there. There's one bathroom, and there's, like, a big room of, like, 80 women, and it was horrible. But as soon as I got out on the way to the airport, I needed a drink. And, you know, we got there and we drank the whole time, and I really just thought it was, you know, bad luck that, I'd gotten arrested. And, so, you know, that kind of continued on, and, you know, my life, you know, just kept spiraling. You know, my marriage was unhappy. I was unhappy at work. You know, I didn't think life treated me fair, and if everybody would just act a certain way, I'd be okay and I'd be happy. Lots of counseling. Lots of medications. Of course, none of that works when you're drinking, and just nothing I did seemed to work. Nothing changed, because I wasn't changing. So the January before I got sober, I was driving my nephews around in a car, basically in a blackout, and I got up on I-4 the wrong way, and I came down, and my tires spun. You know, got a flat, and I managed to make it home, and my husband found me, you know, passed out in the driveway with my nephews in the back of the car, terrified and screaming. You know, yet another, you know, what you would think horrible thing that would wake you up and say, you have got a problem. But no, you know, it didn't really sink in that I needed help, that alcohol was my problem. It was all these other things, and that was the reason that I drank. So finally, in April, I had been fired from my job. My husband was out of the country, and I was alone, and I was very depressed, and I was suicidal because my life was just sucked, and I just didn't, you know, feel like going on. So my sister found me, and I had a bunch of pills, and I had vodka, and they called the 911, and they came, and And I just told him that, you know, that I just did not want to live. Well, again, click, click, and off to the hospital, the nut ward. And they took me to the emergency room first because they thought I had OD'd, and they give you this stuff when they think you've OD'd, and it's charcoal, and if anybody's had it, you know what happens, and it's horrible. And so I was in the emergency room, and there was this man outside my door while I was going to the bathroom, and this was not good, and I just wanted to go home. So I left. I left the emergency room. I ran from the emergency room, actually. And I was scared to death because I knew I wasn't supposed to leave. I mean, they told me. I mean, I knew that I was going over to this other place for 3 days. But I just wanted to go home. So I ran home, and oh, my God, I was scared to death. I ran all the way. It was terrible. And I was scared to death because I knew I was in big trouble. You know, I called my sister. She had caller ID. She goes, "How are you home?" And I said, "Well, I left the hospital." She said, "They're supposed to have a police officer outside your door." I said, "Well, I just left. I didn't want to be there. I'm home." She goes, "The police are looking for you." I'm like, "Great." So now I'm terrified that I'm going to be arrested and taken back to jail. And I'd already been there once. I did not want to go back. And so, you know, I was scared. I knew I was in trouble with my husband because he was having to fly home from work. And I just knew I was in trouble. I had lost my job, and he didn't know that. And I was just out of gas. I was desperate. I was done. I did not know. I was hopeless. I was dead on the inside. So he came home. I had turned myself back in. I called to make sure that if I turned myself back in, they were not going to take me to jail. And they said they wouldn't. And so my husband drove me over to the mental health ward over there at Florida Hospital. I had to check myself in, and I stayed there for the 3 days that was required, telling them anything I could to get out of there, you know, agreeing to do whatever almost they wanted to put me in. Long-term outpatient therapy, and I didn't want to do that because I didn't like to be told what to do. I didn't want to be confined. I didn't want to not be able to smoke when I wanted to smoke or when I could go to the bathroom or just whatever. I just, no, I didn't want to be, you know, confined. The psychiatrist there, I guess is what he is, told me that, you know, if I had any hope of not returning there, he said, "I will see you again if something doesn't change." And he said, you know, "Your only hope is to get to Alcoholics Anonymous." And that was devastating news. I mean, not trying to be funny, but it was, because I had been to a few AA meetings before when I thought I might have a problem, and I went to appease my husband, my mother, my sister, my boss, trying to keep my job, and I went. I was like, "Oh, my God, no way." And I went with no intentions of doing anything. I just went to go. So when he told me I had to go to AA and that was my only chance, I was terrified because I thought, I don't think that's going to work for me. I don't think I'm going to be able to not drink, but I will. I was scared enough to be open enough to the idea to go, because I knew that I was pretty much out of choices at this point. And if I continued on, you know, he told me that he would either see me repeated times or that I would die, you know, drunk. And even though I tried to kill myself, I was afraid of that. So I got out of the hospital, and I don't exactly remember how I found out about Central, but this was the first place that I came to when I got out. And I came for a 3 o'clock meeting. That was in the guide. They must have given me a guide at the hospital. I don't remember. And I got here at 3 o'clock. It was the old building with a coffee bar in the back and George, and I came at 3 o'clock and there was no meeting, and I was like, "What is going on?" And I was terrified anyway. And I talked to them. They said, "Come back at 6 o'clock. There's a meeting." I'm like, "Are you sure?" Because the guide said there was one at 3. "Yes, there's one at 6. Come back." I said, "Okay." And the first lady that I met here was Marion. I'm sure most of you know Marion, and I was so scared, and she was so kind to me, and I told her I didn't know what to do. I kind of gave her a little history about what was going on, and I said, you know, I don't know if I'll make it back at 6. You know, what am I going to do if I need to drink before then? And she said, call me. So she gave me her number. I didn't call. But I didn't drink either. You know, I came to the 6 o'clock meeting. I came in. I sat at the back. You know, I didn't want anybody to know I was here or that I was new. And I was, you know, I was embarrassed. I was terrified. I was ashamed. And I did not want to be here. Plain and simple, I did not want to be here. I was mad. So I didn't really, you know, I really admire these people that come in now that are new, you know, and they raise their hand and they ask for help and they get connected right away. And I always encourage, you know, the girls that I work with to do that because it makes it so much easier. So I came in and I didn't have a job, so I came to, you know, several meetings a day. I like to go to the 6:30 a.m. meeting because I couldn't sleep, and I would come to the 6:30 a.m. meeting in the morning and the 8 o'clock evening meeting. And I didn't get a sponsor right away, and I just didn't ask for help. And I finally got to the point that I was more scared to not ask for help than to ask for help because I was afraid I was going to drink because I knew if I didn't do what these people were talking about that I was not going to be able to stay sober. So I guess the, you know, what I'm trying to say with that is that, you know, I got some hope, you know, just a little bit at a time, a day at a time, you know, keep coming back, you know, don't drink between meetings. And the people here seem to be, you know, reasonably happy. And I, like I said, I was out of options, you know, and I was really, I think, more scared that this would not work for me than anything because I did everything with the drink, you know. I was a morning drinker, you know, by the time that I quit. The only thing that I hadn't done yet was drink and go to work. But I'm sure that was probably like weeks away. But on the weekend, you know, I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning, straight out of the freezer, the vodka, have a few drinks, go back to sleep for a little while, and that continued, you know, for the whole weekend. So I just couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. I thought I had been sentenced to a life of hell, no fun. You know, what was I going to do at Christmas, at my birthday, la, 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 you know, just all these things. And just every day, you know, because I drank every day. So I asked this lady to be my sponsor. And she started me on the steps. You know, I pretty much, you know, knew that I was, you know, powerless over alcohol. I wasn't so sure that my life was unmanageable, though, you know. It was pretty clear that it was, but not to me, because I still, at that time, thought that it was more about everybody else than me. You know, I just didn't see how my drinking caused the unmanageability in my life. So I came in, and I, you know, like I said, I got a sponsor, and that didn't, my first sponsor didn't work out too good, so I asked another lady to be my sponsor, and she was tough, you know. There was no, you know, BS in her, and that's what I needed. I mean, she wasn't mean, but she was, you know, she was stern. I was afraid of her. And and I needed, you know, I didn't need somebody to go, okay, it's going to be okay, you know, come on, I'll hold your hand. You know, I needed somebody to say, this is what you are, this is what you've done, this is what we need to do, and this is how we're going to, you know, get through it. So that was in April, and then in August, well, in June, my sister followed suit and came in and got sober. So we were able to share this journey together. And my... I had my first spiritual experience and my first spiritual awakening before I had even begun my steps, really, had gotten into the middle of them. My mother died suddenly in August, just out of the blue. And April, May, June, July, August. Like, I was 4 months sober. And I just thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to drink. This is it. You know, everybody will understand, you know, my mother died. Of course I'm going to drink. And, but, you know, the funny thing happened is that I was more afraid to drink than anything. You know, I mean, I was upset that my mother had died, obviously, but I picked up the phone and I called my sponsor and I talked to my sponsor the entire way to my where my mother was. And my sister was there, and we cried and did whatever, and they took her away, and we looked at each other. It was a Thursday night, and it was probably around 7 o'clock, and my sister and I looked at each other and said, what do you want to do? And we kind of said, we need to go to a meeting. We need to go to a meeting, because that's what we did. I went to a meeting every day. So we came to the meeting. We shared, and we stayed sober that day. And we were able, through the grace of God, the people in this room, hand carried us through the experience, and we managed to stay sober a day at a time through it. And I knew right then and there something was different in my life, because I did not want to drink. And that, for me, that's a miracle, because I'm a drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I love to drink. And so, right then and there, I had some faith, and I had lots of hope. I didn't really have a God, yet. The group was my higher power for a very long time, because I just believed because you believed. I know that the book tells us that, deep down inside there's a fundamental idea of God, but I didn't really have any religious upbringing, so I didn't really have any religious knowledge about, God. So I worked my steps. I did my fourth and fifth step after my mom was gone, and, it was not a scary thing. Because, I thought I was this nice person that just all these bad things had happened to, and I wrote down these little things, and I was all ready to talk to my sponsor about this and see, this is why. And she was able to point out to me where I had been at fault and what my part was. And I was able to get a good look at myself, because I just thought I was this nice person trying to help everybody out, and I just drank too much. Well, the truth was, I caused terrible pain to a lot of people, and I had to take a look at that, and I did that, and then, I proceeded with the rest of the steps. I think that I'm a different person today than I was then, because I think the same person will drink again. I know that I do things today because I want to do them, not because I have to do them, or not because I want to get something from you, or I think you're going to do something for me. I have had the opportunity to, sponsor several women, and that's been the greatest gift that I've ever had, to help somebody else like I was helped. To stay in the book, to be in the book, and do what the book says. I still attend, meetings regularly. My life is a little more filled than when I, got here. I have a son. That's another gift of my sobriety. I work full-time, and I do service work for the group. I think I consider myself an active, member of Alcoholics Anonymous for sure. And I love to be here. And it's only 8:35. So, I'm not good at this. I know that I have gained so much from this group and the people in here. I've seen men and women walk through amazing things a day at a time and stay sober. I see people come in that you think would, never get the program, and they get it. And it's just, I know that that's, God's grace. And I'm really not sure what else to say. I think I'm just, Is it good? We're going to be good. So I just thank you for letting me be here.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. I spoke one time, and I went for like 35 minutes, and the chairperson said that he wished he would have brought his sock puppet and done a little show after I spoke. I was so embarrassed, but anyway, so you did wonderful. Thank you so much.